In today's episode of the Over 50 Health and Wellness Show, we're diving deep into the world of health, wellness, and the cutting-edge approach known as precision medicine. As we age, our focus on health sharpens, driven by a desire to not just extend our lifespan, but to enhance the quality of our later years. Today, we are joined by a very special guest, a leading figure in the realm of precision medicine, to explore how this innovative approach is revolutionizing the way we think about healthcare, especially for those of us over 50. Stay tuned as we unravel the mysteries of our bodies with insight that could change the way you live the second half of your life. Hello and welcome to the Over 50 Health and Wellness Show. I'm your host, Kevin English. I'm the founder of The Silver Edge, and our mission is to help you build and maintain a lean, healthy body that you love for the rest of your life, so that you can show up in the second half of your life as the healthiest, strongest, most vital version of yourself. We have a fantastic show for you today. Dr. Matthew Dawson is here, and he's going to share some important insights on how to optimize our health as we age. But before we jump into that, I want to let you guys know that this podcast is brought to you by Givaderm. Givaderm is on a mission to give you a luxury skincare experience that is 100% toxin-free so that you don't only end up clean, smelling great, and looking fabulous, but you're improving your whole body health when you use these products. And guys, I'm talking to you as well. Caring for and nourishing our skin is vital for our healthy aging as well. I personally have been using their soap and deodorant for quite some time now, and I've even been using their facial addition system to really up my skincare game lately. If you're interested in learning more, head over to silveredgepartners.com, click on the Givaderm icon, and make sure you use coupon code SILVEREDGE, that's SILVEREDGE all run together, no spaces, to save 10% off your first purchase. Today on the Over 50 Health and Wellness Show, we welcome Dr. Matthew Dawson, co-founder and CEO of Wild Health and a trailblazer in the field of precision medicine. With a medical degree from the University of Kentucky and a residency in emergency medicine at the University of Utah, Dr. Dawson has always been driven by a passion for optimizing health and performance. His career, marked by national awards for innovation and leadership, spans over a decade of dedication to functional medicine and genomics. Join us today as Dr. Dawson shares his journey from an athletics-obsessed teen to a physician at the forefront of personalized healthcare. I started our conversation by asking Dr. Dawson how he got interested in the subject of medicine.
I told my mother when I was 5 years old, that's what I was going to do. And I've always been obsessed with how the body works and optimizing it. In high school, no one in my family was a physician ever. I grew up in rural Kentucky. But in high school, I remember I played all the sports, realized pretty quickly I had no actual talent in any of them. So I really had to focus on squeezing as much as I could out of my body. Ended up getting a scholarship to play a couple different sports because of that obsession. Then really realized against good competition that I really wasn't any good. So I kind of stopped that in college and focused on medicine ever since. And it's been a really fun journey.
All right. So what were your sports? You said you had a couple of them that you kind of went into. What were you doing?
Yeah, it's funny. I played, I think, every sport in high school. My two least favorite were the ones I got scholarship offers in, which were soccer and tennis. So yeah, I played those for a couple years in college. And some of the guys I played with ended up playing professionally. They were really good, and I just wasn't at that level. But it was fun to compete against those guys. Now, I love to play anything. I'm kind of obsessed with pickleball at the moment. So
yeah,
that's my thing now. Any chance I get to get on the court.
Pickleball kind of sweeping the nation here, isn't it?
It is. I mean, at first I thought, okay, this is a sport for old people. I don't really want to do this. And then the first time I got on, I was like, this is just so, the speed and the strategy. It's just so much fun. I love it.
Yeah. All right, man. I love it. All right. So it sounds like you've been active and in shape all your life, fascinated with how the body works, end you up in medical school here. You come out with your medical degree. You look like you're a fairly young dude over there, but I'm guessing you didn't just graduate and start this new business here. What happens next? Do you go into general practice? What are you doing?
Yes, I'm 78, but because of how good Dr.
How good the medicine works. Folks on YouTube, right? You can see how young this guy looks here.
Now I'm 42, yes. So I came out, it was in traditional medicine for a few years, realized pretty quickly it didn't work. Our normal kind of medical model, prescribing medications, pushing pills, putting Band-Aids on things just wasn't working, and became really excited about 6 years ago, really, started seeing a ton of evidence around genomics and personalized medicine, and went down that rabbit hole. My co-founder, Dr. Mike Mallon, he and I were both, we were both at universities. We were associate professors teaching other med students and residents. And when we saw this evidence, we realized like we actually can do personalized medicine now, but no one's doing it. And that's kind of what led us to founding Wild Health from there.
Gotcha. So we've certainly talked about this on this show in the past, but you said as a doctor, you got in there and you realized it didn't work. You want to elaborate on that? I mean, you mentioned briefly there, hey, we're prescribing pills and Band-Aids. My guess is you're not really, your feeling is you're not curing things. Is that fair?
That's right. I think medicine is an interesting place, like with traditional medicine. I think it's both. It's left behind and forgot a lot of ancestral truths. It doesn't talk about let food be thy medicine, exercise, sleep, the things that we really know matter. So it's kind of too far ahead. It's left these things behind, yet it's also behind. The science is much further along than what we're doing. So it's in this real, really weird space where I didn't want to be. And that's, and even the name Wild Health, it's partly an allusion to that. The wild is about the genomics, the DNA sequencing. Every patient, we go really deep with the science, genetics, epigenetics, all your wearable data, stuff that medicine doesn't do. And then the other part of wild is referring to wilderness and nature and getting people back to growing their own food, exercising in nature, focusing on those natural things. So it's in this just no man's land of behind the science and forgetting the things that we've known for thousands of years work.
Yeah, it does seem to have grown up into this behemoth. And, you know, we've said it on this show many times before, which is about $4.5 trillion in the U.S. annually in medical spend. And yet we seem to be getting unhealthier, sicker, fatter year over year. And yet we have these astronomical and astronomically growing expenses. And there's this big, big disconnect between actual health in our medical system. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't want to throw the medical system under the bus. If I go outside and drop down from a heart attack or get, you know, run over by a bus, I want Western medicine to come in and acutely care for me. But it just seems like we've done a really poor job in these lifestyle diseases or these preventable, we're trying to cure, it seems like, between pharma and medical, these lifestyle diseases. Is that fair?
Yeah, for sure. And you look at the medical industrial complex and the incentives, and I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist and kind of go down that path.
Let's go, man.
Yeah. I mean, the summary of it is it doesn't work, regardless of what the incentives and who's getting rich off of it and things like that. It doesn't work.
Right.
And our goal, I mean, we are physicians. We do practice medicine, but we really talk about how to figure out what is the root cause of what's going wrong with you and fix that. Something's popping into my mind right now about one of an NBA player that we were taking care of. And he initially came to us. He's a max contract guy, incredible athlete, but he came because of depression and anxiety, mood issues during the year. Well, we didn't prescribe him an SSRI. We didn't do that. We really went deep. What's going on? Did sequence his DNA, look at his blood work, but also talk to him. And we found some really interesting things. We found that he was doing the same thing as all the other players on his team, which was right before his games, he would drink a ton of Red Bull, all this caffeine, these uppers. And then after the game, couldn't get to sleep, be up all night, wake up just in time for shoot around, go back to bed, get up for the game in this cycle. And what we realized is it was all related to his sleep. And we wanted to optimize his sleep, but it wasn't that simple. Like doctors or people say, sleep better. Okay, what does that mean? When we look at his genetics, he was a very slow metabolizer of caffeine. And we've known for decades that caffeine is an ergogenic aid, makes you perform better. But if you really look at those studies, it makes 80% of people perform better. Well, it turns out 80% of people are fast metabolizers. The others are intermediate or slow. Slow metabolizers make you perform worse. So he was performing worse by doing this thing that works for most people. He also had a gene called the ADORA2A that really disrupted his sleep if you have caffeine. So he's metabolizing it slow, had this other gene. We fixed these things holistically, and he was in talks for the MVP last year. Incredible year. And that's a perfect example of depression, anxiety. You don't cure with a pill, with SSRI or something for a benzo. You got to get to the root cause, and you need the data to do it. And you need to do this really weird thing in medicine that we don't do very often, the ancient thing we've discovered called a conversation, actually talking to the patient a little bit.
But
that's what we do.
Gotcha. Okay. No, that's a great example when you talk about, because that's not evident, right? You have this high-performing athlete comes in, he's talking about these issues, and through this precision medicine, it leads you down this road. Well, hey, he's got this genetic kind of factor for being a crappy sleeper maybe. And it turns out, lo and behold, he's also genetically not so gifted when it comes to metabolizing caffeine. And he's doing the same thing everybody else is doing, which is probably chugging, you know, Red Bulls or whatever it is. And that's, you know, that's for those of us that are weekend warriors, right? If you're scooping your pre-workout or drinking a Monster Energy right before your workout, and you know, for like you said, 80% of people, that might actually benefit their performance, but there's going to be a small group that it doesn't. So that gives an inkling of what you mean when you say precision medicine. But before we really dial in on precision medicine, I'm going to kind of go back. You mentioned, I think it was 6 years ago, genomics was kind of, you know, you noticed that genomics was really opening up and it was giving you this, I guess, wild opportunity, right? What is it about, what did you see in the research that was coming, or the availability or the technology, that really got you thinking, hey, I could use this to be really specific with the way I treat individuals?
Yeah, for sure. So as I kind of already alluded to, I think medicine is usually about 15 years behind the science. So we started seeing the science coming out. It wasn't brand new. It was within the last few years, but medicine certainly hadn't caught up. So what Mike and I did is we really went down the rabbit hole, reading everything we could find on personalized medicine, how we can apply genomics to give really precise recommendations. And as we were doing that, Mike had a really difficult issue where he found that his cholesterol was through the roof, not like a little elevation that people get upset about that's nothing, but really dangerous levels. He went to see his doctor. His doctor put him on a specific diet. He got worse. It was a diet that works for most people, didn't for him. His doctor wanted to put him on a statin. We were a little worried about that, but he went ahead and went on it because of how high his numbers were. He didn't tolerate it, got muscle breakdown, myopathy. And as he's going through this, we were sequencing our DNA. And we saw, we looked at his DNA, he had all of these SNPs related to sensitivity to certain foods that were opposite of mine. But it showed that he needed to be on a diet almost exact opposite of what his doctor had said. He also had a SNP that made him almost guaranteed to have that muscle breakdown from myopathy. So at first we were angry, like, this is pretty straightforward. Why does the doctor not see this? Why do you have to suffer? And then we realized, yeah, this is what we know. No one's doing this. Science is not there. And it really gave us the impetus to start doing this. We had, right after that, we saw my grandmother. She had dementia, a genetic and lifestyle disease. It's a combination thing. When we first saw her, her MoCA score was a 16, kind of moderate dementia. And with dementia, you want it to, I mean, it's a horrible disease if you've ever had a family member with it, but you want their MoCA score, for example, to go 16, 15, 14. You want to slow it down. You don't want to get a 16, 10, 5. Well, we saw her, did this big workup, holistic treatment based on her genetics and everything else. When we saw her again in 3 months, her MoCA went from a 16 to a 20. So 25% improvement, which just doesn't happen. I immediately saw my mother because I was worried she would have the same genetics. Sure enough, she had an APOE4 gene. If you're familiar with that, it puts you at a much increased risk for dementia. She also was a metabolic wreck, insulin resistance, obese, and put her on the program. In 3 months, she lost 40 pounds, reversed her insulin resistance, told me she felt 20 years younger, put Mike's mom on the program. She lost 80 pounds, got off all of her medications. And then we quit our jobs. We left the university and said, this is what we're going to do. And we've seen thousands of patients since then. And it's been really incredible to see the results when you take this approach.
All right. So I suppose at this point, I should mention that I am a patient of yours. I've gone through this process. I've done this testing, had my meeting with my precision medicine doctor and my prescription. So I want to, you had mentioned a whole bunch in there, right, about all of this individualized data. So first things first, when somebody applies or starts to work with you folks in your world, they're going to do this very comprehensive onboard. Now, when I go to, I'm just going to kind of compare and contrast this experience from conventional medicine. When I go to see my, you know, let's say I go to a new doctor, for example, he or she probably wants to know, you know, do my parents have these diseases? They're going to get some basic history, but you guys ask me things like, what are my goals? Like, what do I want? Right? Which is, no doctor's ever asked me that, right? You know, do I have an aesthetic goal? Do I have a performance goal? Do I have a longevity goal? Do I just have do I have certain concerns? But other than like disease history, I'm not really asked a whole lot, right? You guys collected probably a quart of blood. I mean, that poor phlebotomist, she was lining up test tubes for a couple of minutes there. I was a little nervous. I got to be honest before she went in there. I was like, how much blood are you going to take here, lady? But you took a bunch of blood and being facetious, nobody took a quart of blood from me, but you guys we did a blood draw through a LabCorp. And then you talked about this genetic sequencing. So what that was is that's just a little swab that I do in my mouth at home and I send it into you. And lo and behold, what happens is now you guys have got this tremendous amount of information. You've done some blood work that my regular physician on my annual physician doesn't normally do. So you've got this very comprehensive blood panel, and you're coupling that with this genetic information, right? So let's jump into, I think most people are pretty familiar with the blood work side, right? And you guys are obviously, I think, very comprehensive and intentional there. But talk to us about this genetic sequencing and what's the kind of information. You kind of gave a couple of hints already, but what is it in that genetic information that allows you to be so personalized with recommendations?
Yeah, for sure. And we also ask all the questions, Kevin, because it turned out you're a person, not just a bunch of lab tests and things. And so we want to know about your emotional health, spiritual health, all of those things as well.
That's right. You do ask all that, yeah.
But the data is important. To me, it's maddening that every physician doesn't know the genetics of their patient. So we sequence every patient's DNA. That's like your human operating system. We need to know that. Your DNA is not your destiny, though. Your genetic makeup, it affects about 20% of your health outcome. So your epigenetics, everything you do, eat, sleep, stress, what you're exposed to, makes up the other 80%. So we need that operating system. What are the risk factors? Like my mother had the APOE4 gene, and we can talk about some specific ones. But then we need to know, how are you performing now? How are you expressing those genes? So we also do epigenetics, look at about 950,000 CPG sites to see how all of your genes are turned up or down. We get the blood test, a lot of blood. Sorry about that. But yeah, we want all of that data to start
out.
Yeah,
lots of blood. Yeah.
It's a couple of vials each time after that, we get more targeted. But we want as much data as we can get to start. We also frequently will test microbiome. We can pull in all the data from your wearables. And what that does is allows us to give recommendations, and all of it is important. So I'll give you an example from my mother, for example. So with her genetics, she had the APOE4. She's at risk for dementia. But when I start thinking about what recommendation we give around food, she had a VDR SNP. That means she probably needs more vitamin D. But we also looked at, what is her vitamin D level? And then, is she in Kentucky in the winter, or is she in Florida in the summer, like for the sunlight? And from there, the kind of AI algorithm that we have can make a recommendation of, you need a vitamin D supplement, or you don't need anything, or you just need to eat more shiitake mushrooms that have vitamin D in it, or you just need more organ meats. Now, for her specifically, she also had a FADS2 polymorphism, meaning she needed more omega-3. She had a collagen 5A1, meaning she needed more collagen protein. She had a BCMO, more vitamin A. You put these together and you realize that the perfect food for her is a sardine. It's got the omega-3, a clean source, the collagen protein, the organs in there for vitamin A and D. And we can identify superfoods for you. And then kryptonite foods. She's not a celiac person, but she had an SH2B3, meaning she shouldn't eat wheat and gluten. Even though she doesn't have classic celiac, it's going to cause some inflammation, which will increase her risk. So we get very specific with foods. I already gave you a sleep example, exercise. So I'll give you an example from myself. When we started doing this, I told you about Mike. For me, the biggest aha was I was doing Ironman races, endurance events at that point, and I had just this awful chronic inflammation, lots of joints and tendon issues chronically. And I found that I had these specific SNPs on ACTN, other ones for recovery. that meant I needed more recovery than most people. And I had that collagen 5A1 as well. So when I increased my collagen input and changed the volume and sets I was doing working out, I started performing so much better. I could put my socks on in the morning without sitting down again because I was so much less inflamed. So really specific interventions for food, sleep, supplements, exercise, everything that makes us have a certain health outcome.
Yeah, that was 100% my experience as well. So I got a list of my kryptonite foods and my superfoods, right? And like your mom, very similar there. One of the things that really surprised me was my doctor was, hey, do you avoid gluten? I was like, no, absolutely. I do not avoid gluten. Have you ever considered doing so? Because, you know, he could see there in my genetics that I had that. What is that, a SNP or an allele? I'm going to go back and ask you to help me with some of this vocabulary. But here are these foods, and lo and behold, the smash fish were recommended for me as well, which people don't know, smash is what that's going to be, salmon, mackerel, anchovy, sardines, and herring, I think.
Yeah.
All the little oily fish. Well, I guess salmon could be a big fish. But yeah, so I got this very specific recommendation for diet, things I should be including. Turns out I'm a crappy methylator, so there was some methylation, some B vitamins, supplements, a high dose fish oil, and a vitamin D supplement. So those were the three supplements, but everything else was just diet, right? I eat more of these cruciferous vegetables, leafy dark greens, go figure, right? Oily fish, and avoid some of these, sugar. For me, I am gluten-free now as of, I guess, a week and a half to end almost my second week here, not really missing it, feeling pretty damn good. But to your point, it was really fun kind of going through, I got this full workup on exercise and recovery and how I do genetically there, as well as lifestyle, as well as more, you know, mindfulness and sleep. And I've got all of these ideas about how to best set myself up for optimal health, right? Because that's really what we're talking about here. My doctor says, hey, let's put this plan in place to move you towards optimal health, as opposed to my previous experience with commercial, just conventional medicine, I suppose, is more like, hey, you're not sick. Keep doing what you're doing. I'll see you next year. Or worse yet, I come in, I roll in there. Oh, okay. Yeah. Cholesterol's not looking great, Kev. The blood pressure's up, and here, take this medicine and be on your way. I'll see you next year. A much, much different approach. Now, I want to talk a little bit about, because people are hearing you say SNPs and they're hearing you say these acronyms. I know I have these risk alleles as part of the vocabulary here in my health report. Help us understand when you're talking through this, there's how many points of data are you guys dealing with genetically? And help us through some of this basic vocabulary that we might hear as just lay people.
Sure. Yeah. So when we look at your genetics, we're not looking for what people consider genetic mutations. It's just slight differences in how your genes are expressed. So to use the example of the APOE that I mentioned for my mother, there's three different alleles there. You can be an APOE 2, 3, or 4, but you inherit two alleles, one from your father and one from your mother.
So an allele is?
It's a variation in that gene. So it's an APOE gene.
Okay, gotcha.
Two different variations. The 2 put you at decreased risk for dementia. The 4 put you at increased risk. The 3 is kind of the wild type and the normal version. So I, for example, I'm a 3-3. So I got a 3 from my mother and 3 from my father. My mom is a 4-3. So I got her 3. I was kind of lucky there. And I got a 3 from my dad. If she had 2 of those 4 alleles, she would be at about a 12 times increased risk for dementia. Having one of them, she's at about a 3 times increased risk. She'd had a 2, she would be lower than baseline risk. So that's what we look at, and that's one gene. And you ask how many points. We look at about 700,000 specific SNPs. So it's a lot of data. And when I say we look at it, when Mike and I first started.
Yeah. That's a lot of data.
Yeah, and it's too much for a human brain. Like, the physician should be practicing medicine, talking about the translation. So over the last 5 years, we've actually spent tens of millions of dollars developing this AI algorithm that takes into account the 700,000 genes. We look at, I think, between 50 and 100 biomarkers, depending on what we're doing, and those have a near infinite range of what they could be. then the questionnaires and the wearables. So it's millions of data points that we're pulling in, and then that leads to the recommendation engine. But even then, when we have that report, there's still some subjectivity with the physician based on your goals and your desires. And if I say the perfect food for you is sardines, you say, no way, I'm never going to eat sardines. Great. We're going to talk about which fish you will, and then maybe we need to add some of vitamin D or vitamin A or other things. So there's a bit of an art to it as well, but it's a lot of data we look at, and then we have a person that can talk to you and a health coach that can help then translate and hold you accountable as well. We think the AI and kind of the machine learning is incredibly helpful, but it's not a replacement for a physician. I think one is better than the other, a doctor or the machine. We think it's the combination of the two is where we get the real power.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. And then for folks that are trying to imagine what this is like, it, for example, I'm just looking at my health report here, and under my diet and nutrition, I've got a fat intolerance chart. And underneath there's all these, what are those? Are those my risk alleles underneath that? Now, they're color-coded, green, yellow, orange. And so I can see there's this little, if you're watching on YouTube, I'm making a motion here, but I've got this green to red, so to speak, sort of spectrum of where I fit on all of these different risk factors, nutritionally, movement-wise, lifestyle-wise. And I can look in there and see where I have, for example, it looks like I do really well with saturated fat intolerance, with carb intolerance and fat intolerance. But I do less so in other areas where I have more risk. Like, for example, my choline risk score is rather high, but my folate risk score is in the green. So it gets really, really in depth. And of course, in this guide, and if you don't know what a choline risk score or a folate risk score, which I didn't before, certainly I got this, everything is really well spelled out. You have this giant glossary in the back as well to kind of help make sense of all this, but you're getting scored on all of these different data points. And now, like I said, my prescription was just a couple of, he did recommend a couple of supplements, but really everything else is going to be lifestyle. But that brings me to the question, because my doctor doesn't tell me to take prescriptions or really, you know, other than some vague, hey, you should move more and eat less, maybe if I'm overweight, perhaps, but I don't really get lifestyle recommendations. Do you guys, are you able to prescribe meds? I mean, if my cholesterol was through the roof, would you put me on a statin? Would you, or I don't know if that's a good example, given that statins, maybe their efficacy right now is being called into question, but do you guys prescribe medicines as well?
For sure. When they're warranted. Okay. I mean, in all honesty, we usually stop more prescriptions than we start, but we're not afraid of prescriptions. I mean, the saturated fat is a great example. So Mike and I have almost exact opposite genetics when it comes to saturated fat intolerance. I don't have any saturated fat intolerances. I do great with like a ketogenic animal heavy diet. He needs to be almost vegan. And we've tested this to where we first found this, we're like, wow, this is interesting. And we, for 2 weeks, we would eat my diet, which is kind of more carnivorous keto. And we did the same workouts, test our blood before and after. He felt like crap. I destroyed him in the workouts. We switched to his diet. He felt amazing, destroyed me. His inflammatory markers were through the roof when he was eating my diet. Mine was when his. And we had this light bulb aha moment of like, this is why that diet and nutrition is like religious wars. People find the one that works for them and they assume it works for everyone. And we're just very different. Now, I didn't answer your question about medication, but I'll use this same example. If we have someone who we do the lifestyle recommendations, their cholesterol is just not getting any better. Well, maybe it's an issue, maybe it's not. We go further. We will do specific tests around what they're going to respond to medication-wise before we talk about a medication, what the risk factors is, pharmacogenomics, what medications will work for you, which ones will harm you. And then we go further as well. What we're really trying to prevent, while people are worried about saturated fat, is it leading to plaque buildup in the arteries? Well, we can look at that now. So with our patients, we also do things like a Cleerly scan, which is a cardiac CTA, an AI cardiac CTA to look. So if I've got a patient I'm thinking of now who she has really high LP little A, which is the worst marker for cholesterol and kind of cardiovascular health. However, she runs 5 miles a day, takes incredible care of herself otherwise. And before putting her on a medication, we got a Cleerly scan. She's 62, but it's pristine. She has no buildup. So we practice precision medicine, but not perfect medicine. We need more and more data. And so now we see that she doesn't need to, she, any other doctor would put her on a medication. We're not, because it's not having that end organ outcome. Now, some patients, though, we find they do need, they are getting that plaque buildup. They do need a medication, but maybe their genetics are like Mike's and a statin they're going to respond negatively to. Well, that's fine. We just go straight to the next line, which would be Repatha. And then we would test that. And then we want objective markers of, are we making progress or not? So then we would retest both the cholesterol and potentially the CTA scan after 3 to 6 months of intervention, however long it takes for that intervention to work. So it's an iterative process as well to get it right. We just use so much data so that we can be more precise and get to the right outcome with less of the trial and error, which is what most of medicine is.
Yeah, that trial and error, that's what most of medicine is. And, you know, as a nutrition coach, I have, you know, I will tell clients all the time that we're all bio-individuals. You know, oftentimes people go, what do you eat? And I say, well, that's very limited value to you, right? And I used to describe it as, well, it's, you know, it's part science and part art. But as I meet you guys and start talking with you, I realize you're sucking some of the art out of this, right? This really, you guys have really honed in that missing piece, that precision medicine, so that it is much more science and much less art. The art for a nutrition coach is, all right, let me try this. Let me, you know, what I'm looking at is a weekly feedback form that says, hey, here's how I self-rate myself on my sleep and my energy and my mood, as well as, hey, I see your food logs and I see how you're performing in your exercise. And I'm using that feedback. I'm not using 700,000 data points that AI is crunching for me. So I think this is really fascinating where this is going. And I just want to ask, like, Where do you see the future of this kind of medicine? Do you see a future where it replaces, I don't want to say replace, but does it become the norm for our cares, or just healthcare system, or is it still going to be pretty fringe? How does that look?
Yeah, it's a great question. So you mentioned it's being part science, part art. I would agree with that, and I would say it definitely is that. Our approach, though, is that we just want the best science and the best artists. Like your doctor, Dr. Graham, is just an incredible artist. I see him. He's brilliant. But we don't want him to just be relying on that. We want to give him the best science. So it's still science and art. We just want to elevate both of those. So where it's going, science is progressing so fast right now. So I tell you, one of the things that I'm really excited about, and what really excites me is, it's here. Like I heard a quote once, the future is here. It's just unevenly distributed. Same thing for medicine. Sure. It's here.
Yeah.
Unevenly distributed. What excites me is when the cost comes down to where everyone can afford it. So that's the next big breakthrough, I think. And I think where that's going to come is epigenetics. So I mentioned on our patients, we do epigenetic testing. So there's a company that we use called True Diagnostics. They do incredible work with epigenetics. So I said they look at kind of the 950,000 CPG sites. And from that, they can predict biologic age, your pace of aging, which aging is the number one risk factor for all diseases. But they also can impute these 4,000 different things with the drop of blood, all these different proteins, metabolites, biomarkers. And it gives us so much more data. So we have the 700,000 genes, the 950,000 CPG sites, and the cost is coming down. To have your DNA sequenced a decade ago was millions of dollars. Now it's hundreds of dollars. Hmm. This epigenetic test, it also way more information than any genetic test, and it's hundreds of dollars, and it's coming down even more. So I see a world where in a few years, this will be out for everyone. And it's through a convergence of the AI that we've built and building it on top of large language models. So everyone's familiar with ChatGPT. So we've built something now. We haven't released it yet. It'll probably be in a few months released where, and I'm playing with it every day because it's so fascinating, where we take all of our data. So like for myself, all my DNA, the blood work, my entire medical history, everything about me. And we trained a large language model. And then I can ask it questions. Just like you asked Dr. Graham questions, what should I have for dinner tonight? And it'll tell me based on my last omega-3 level and all my blood levels. And it gives me incredible answers. And I ask it, hey, am I at increased risk for cancer? Which type? What should I do? Amazing information. So right now, what we do with a doctor and a health coach and all the testing, it's not cheap, which bothers me because I grew up poor and where I'm from, people can't afford this. We're not years away, we're months away from having this product where we get all the data, and all of our patients who we see now, we're getting all the data. And so in a matter of months, definitely less than 12, if they want to go into this kind of large language model care, giving them the wellness recommendations, they'll be able to at close to no marginal cost, because it's being delivered just whatever the cost of the servers are. So that's what really excites me, is being able to do this at scale. I want everyone to have access to a doctor and a health coach and all of these things. But even health coaching, if we remove the doctor from the loop, we know that 90% of someone's outcome is not the medical part. It's the lifestyle things. So just arming a health coach with this large language model thing is going to be so powerful and make it so much more affordable. That's what excites me, is being able to scale this to everyone, regardless of their ability to pay.
And so that brings me to the insurance question. What's on the insurance front? Do you see any pushback from, because traditional models, financial models, oftentimes don't like to be disturbed, right? It's tough to break through existing infrastructure. Do you see any pushback? Is that something you guys are pushing hard for? Where I've got Blue Cross Blue Shield. Can I just sign up and roll with you guys? How does that look?
Yeah, so I feel my heart rate rising when we talk about insurance, because of just the system. When we first started, we knew that we didn't want to participate in this system that pushed you towards medications and drugs, and these incentives were all messed up. So we didn't. Then I became frustrated with the cost to individuals, because they're paying for their insurance, or their employer is, and then we asked them to pay cash, and it just didn't feel great. So we tried with insurance. It didn't work. The insurance won't pay for most of this. They're not paying for preventative things. Like you mentioned, they only want to pay for things when you're sick, and we want to keep you from getting sick. So we've left it. The experiment with insurance just didn't work. And so now I'm trying to do a complete end around. And that's where I think about the technology, the large language models being able to allow us to do this. Our outcomes, we published a white paper about a year ago. Our outcomes are incredible, way better than anyone's getting. So you think that insurance would pick it up. To give you one example of outcomes, diabetes, type 2 diabetes. Normally, traditional medicine will reverse type 2 diabetes in about 3% of patients. We looked at all of our patients who came to us with prediabetes or diabetes. 48% of them, just with lifestyle recommendations, completely resolved their A1C to normal. So you think that insurance would be jumping up and down. But again, not to go down the conspiracy rabbit hole, but the insurers, when we've talked to Humana, to Cigna, to, you know, we've talked to them and we say, look at this. You can save $12,000 a year on these diabetic patients. They don't care, because the truth of the matter in our system is they may be insuring this patient now. In 2 years from now, it's going to be a different insurer. So why would they care about saving money for the other ones? Their profits are capped at a certain percentage. It doesn't actually help them to make people better. So we've just opted out. And we think there's a better way, and we're trying to build that.
All right. So let me just keep the tinfoil hat on here for just a minute longer. It seems to me, as you're saying that, because clearly insurance plays the game with big medicine, big pharma. Do you feel like there's resistance? Because there is, let's face it, there is an ugly financial reality associated with, I'd like to call, especially those of us in my age group, right? I'm going to be 60 here in a month. We're cash cows. Most of us, we're sick, we're unhealthy, we're going to spend the rest of our lives on monthly prescription drugs. So there, and again, I don't think there's this evil cabal of men somewhere in the world wringing their hands with delight and glee because we're sick and paying. But there is a very ugly and very large, substantial financial reality there. Do you feel like there's pushback or resistance for people like you and what you're doing? Or is big pharma still think you're too niche? When I say you, I just mean this sector of, hey, because you guys you're not playing by their rules. You're not, I came into this and nobody said, hey, Kev, here's some prescription meds. I think you should go take them. This is, I mean, in my case was 100%, other than a couple of supplements, it was all lifestyle stuff. And I don't think that plays the game the way the current industry wants you to play it. Do you feel like you're up against a stacked deck?
So I just to go back, like you, I don't think there's anyone out there trying to get us necessarily. However, It's just all about incentives. Charlie Munger, the famous Warren Buffett's partner, said, if you can study one thing, study incentives. And so when you look at the incentives, like the payers, they just don't have an incentive for us to be better. If their financial model is they get a certain percentage of profit based on their premiums and what they spend, if we spend more on care and they just pass the premiums along, they make more money the sicker we are. Same thing for most just primary care doctors and hospitals and everyone else. The sicker we are, the more money they make. And so until the incentives are fixed in the model's not going to work. And so that's why we're coming out. I don't think anyone is colluding against us. We're nothing. The $4.5 trillion, like we're nothing. No one cares about us.
Yeah, got a ways to go yet. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not that paranoid, but it's just not a system that I want to play in because the incentives aren't correct.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for that. That's one of the things when I have folks like you come on and talk about these alternative things and even just health coaches in general, right? Those of us that are out here saying, hey, you know, if you just ate real food, you slept decent, just didn't spend your life completely stressed out, and maybe you throw in 2 or 3 weightlifting sessions a week and what the heck, walk every day, you'd probably be doing better than 90% of everybody else out there, right? And that just doesn't fit the common narrative. It doesn't. So we've talked a lot about precision medicine. I want to kind of back up and move out to this more macro level. And I want to ask you about a couple of things that are kind of hot in the wellness and fitness space right now. Get your take on these things in general, just for the population at large, and specifically for the 50, 60-year-old, right? First up is, because this is all the rage right now, you're not going to go on to social media and not see your favorite fitness influencer wincing as he gets down into his ice bath or her ice bath. Cold exposure, overrated, underrated, or right where it should be?
Yeah. So it depends on who's rating and how high they're rating it. So I'll just tell you my thought on it in general. I started doing ice baths probably 4 or 5 years ago and just loved how it made me feel. So I dove deep into the literature and here's my beliefs on it. And my beliefs are based on my reading of the literature and my experience with myself and patients. Where there's some clear evidence is with mood. So you definitely get a surge of your catecholamines, norepinephrine, dopamine, these things. This morning I did a lifting session. I rode for 45 minutes, lifted for 30 minutes, did sauna. I've got a plunge, did the cold plunge, tried to separate it far enough out from my lifting so I wouldn't have blunt the effects of that. Did some sauna again, and I felt amazing. Where the evidence is for mood, there's maybe a little bit of evidence on kind of the immune benefits, people getting fewer colds in the winter. If I had to say, is it overrated or underrated? Right now, it's so hot, I'd say it's probably overrated. But having said that, I do it because I think there's benefit and I frequently recommend it. Now, it's a stressor. It's a hormetic stressor, but it also adds to allostatic load. So everything we do and talk about is extremely personalized. If someone is crushing themselves, stress at work, doing a ton of workout training for things, has all these other things going on, no, don't do it because it's another stress. But I do it. It's just a very individualized thing.
Yeah. So you're going to keep batting me back to individualized. I know you are. And for good reason as well. The other one I wanted to ask you about was the heat, right? The sauna. Great for me. Should everybody do it? Or is it going to really be one of those, it depends?
So everything is, it depends. However, sauna is one that I can give you a much stronger recommendation on. When you look at the studies of Jari Laakkonen from Finland, I mean, these were like studies over decades, big studies. And the results for cardiovascular disease, all-cause mortality, dementia, those things, if sauna was a pill, it would be a blockbuster multi-billion-dollar pill. Mm-hmm. It has a big effect. Obviously, you could overdo it and hurt yourself, but I haven't really seen many people do that. I have seen a couple people because we kind of some crazy patients who really go all out. And I just, for myself, the other day, my wife said, she's like, what are you doing? It looks like you're about to die. And I had been doing blood flow restriction bands in the sauna with a 90-pound kettlebell doing kettlebell swings and about to pass
yeah,
out.
Yeah, some might call that extreme. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are ways to hurt yourself in sauna, but yeah. General recommendation, there's a few things that have better evidence for really decreasing risk later in your life. And the cool thing, I mean, for your podcast listeners over 50, a lot of the Finnish studies were in that population. And there's a nice dose dependency to it, 3 to 4 times a week, really reduced their risk for bad stuff. So I'd give sauna a big thumbs up.
sauna with the thumbs up. We've been looking at the clear light saunas. We're thinking about putting one out here, and we got a little farm out here. Talk about putting one out there. So with that recommendation, I might pursue that. All right. The next one I wanted to ask you about is, are there supplements? When I say supplements, that, you know, that could run the gamut from a multivitamin all the way to, but are there supplements that you would say maybe across the board are a good idea? Or being a precision medicine guy, you can say, nah, Kev, unless I see a deficit, I'm not gonna recommend one across the board.
Yeah, I don't want to be a complete broken record, so I will try to give it a little bit generalized. I think if someone just is completely averse to getting their genetics done, blood work, other things like that, vitamin D and omega 3 are two things that, again, when we say something works in medicine, like this study shows it works, we're saying, does it work for 60% or 80%? Not everybody. Mm-hmm. You could be in the minority. But with those two, it's just really hard to find cases where the downside and cost is more than the benefit. So there are a few things like that, like vitamin D and omega-3. Having said that, I still don't recommend them. And I would just get an omega-3 level and a vitamin D level before, because there's also the question of how much are you going to take? Even if there's not a cost to your health, there's a cost to your wallet. So probably I see people all the time come to us on 20 different supplements because they've heard on a podcast, this supplement is great for that. Yeah. And the podcast isn't lying. It's great for that for most people, sure. But you stack those and then all of a sudden you're spending hundreds of dollars a month on supplements.
Yeah. There was a time in my life when I was convinced that's where the secret lied, because, you know, I didn't want it to be eat healthy and manage your stress and to work out regularly. I wanted it to be, hey, well, I don't mind spending a little bit. And I had a whole cabinet full of them, and I've pared that down pretty considerably these days. What about creatine? That one's got a lot of studies behind it, but some of the more recent studies that I'm seeing are showing like cognitive benefits and things that are outside of the bro reason why it was, I guess, very popular 20 years ago. Is that something you guys would think that's recommended across the board? Or again, is that, well, Kev, that depends. If you're this genetic type, you probably should. And if you're not, then maybe you shouldn't.
No, I'm embarrassed I didn't say creatine with the vitamin D and omega-3. So,
So is that what you'd put up there?
100%. And honestly, I may put that ahead of those two, because there's not really a great test for that. And so, I mean, I take this morning, I had 5 grams of creatine in my coffee. I have creatine every morning. And obviously, in most people, think about it as bros and weightlifting, but it's really the cognitive effects, which are kind of impressive. And I just haven't seen anything really on the downside of that. I think used to, in bro science, people talk about dehydration and worry about your kidneys. The kidney thing, I think, is mostly a myth. People just confused creatine with creatinine and things. It's not really a thing. And you just need to drink enough fluids anyway. So I think creatine is extremely low risk and high yield. And I have this conversation all the time with women who think it's just a guy's thing, a weightlifter thing, but it's not. Creatine is a really great supplement we recommend to.
Creatine, yeah, seems to be having a moment right now. Yeah. What about, why am I drawing a blank? What, the functional mushrooms? What is that class of, like, ashwagandha? Those are the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Thank you. Adaptogens. What about the adaptogens? That's kind of going back to that ancestral thing, right? Some of these things we've used for thousands of years, and they seem to be having a moment now. Is that, again, kind of, hey, I'd rather have that be more precise, or that's something that, it's less downside, more upside?
I think definitely less upside, more downs. I mean, sorry, less downside, more upside. However, here's what I'll say about those. So I have functional mushrooms every day. I mean, I live in the woods in a couple hundred acres, and I've got hundreds of logs inoculated with culinary mushrooms. So I grow lion's mane and it's a little bit of reishi, a lot of golden oyster and shiitake. I also drink 4-sigmatic. I love their lion's mane and chaga. Yeah. Coffee. So shaga, I had reishi last night, shaga and lion's mane this morning. I think those are great. I don't see any reason why you wouldn't do those. However, when we talk about adaptogens in general, you mentioned ashwagandha. That's an interesting one. I think it's very useful. It can kind of blunt cortisol, but there also can be some risks with blunting cortisol too long and consistently. So while we think of adaptogens as something that you can't really do too much of, or it's fine for everybody, I still would like with people, when I talk to them, to get specific. Like, not just use the word adaptogen, but what are you talking about? Is it shaga? Great.
Yeah.
Or I don't see a downside. Ashwagandha, I don't do it every day. Let's use it targeted for a specific reason. So I still like to get kind of specific with even adaptogens.
Right on. All right. Well, thanks for that. Matt, as we're wrapping up here, I just want to finish on this. With the, now with the whole GLP-1, the semi-glutide, so folks, that's Ozempic and Wegovy and some of these weight loss drugs seem to be having a moment now, right? Because they're effective. So I think probably for the first time we can say, hey, we have a pretty reliable and very effective way for people to lose weight. Now, I'm not saying that lose fat or build muscle, but to lose weight. As of today, it's still expensive. And it's, you know, of course, if you don't continue doing it for the rest of your life, you're not going to have those results for the rest of your life. But do you see a future, because I'd ask you about the future where you see this precision medicine going, do you see a future where we're going to maybe someday have medical technology, meaning medicine of some type, that would replace us needing to work out as much or eat so healthy? Can we overcome this modern culture with medicine? Or do you think that's just a crazy dream, and that we're, you know, not whether we should or shouldn't, but can we? Do you think it's going to be possible that someday we're going to develop the next drug that's going to say, hey, now I can actually just target fat. So you're going to maintain whatever muscle mass you have. Oh, I have another drug or some other alternative therapy that can build lean muscle mass, which, you know, has got all these health-giving properties. Do you see a way for us to hack around healthy living in order to have optimal health? Obviously asking for pure conjecture here.
Yeah. No, I'll say yes and no. What I mean by that, so I'm going to use the example you did of Ozempic. Tirzepatide, I think, is actually a better one, less side effects. So I had someone recently, they definitely need to lose like 150 pounds. And okay, like the downsides of having all of that, and we've talked about lifestyle, it just wasn't working, and prescribed them tirzepatide. They're doing fantastic. But I made them promise, like, when you do this, you're going to have to eat 200 grams of protein. You're going to have to do resistance training. Otherwise, I'm not going to do this, because we can't lose all your muscle mass. It's just critical. And it's been a game changer for them. And so many people, these GLP-1 agonists are incredible. And so certainly we could solve the problem maybe of obesity through science. However, that doesn't, to me, say we don't need to exercise and eat healthy, because we as humans are meant to move. So even for this person who I wanted him to get off all the weight just because of the metabolic, he's just so metabolically unhealthy, that doesn't mean he needs to not exercise. Exercise affects mood, so many other things. Walking and moving is a big part of what makes us human. So while I am excited about scientific progress, this person, it tried for years, couldn't lose the weight otherwise. Science really gave them a leg up. Yeah. But it absolutely doesn't mean that he doesn't need to be just as or more focused on the nutritious food he eats and movement for his mental health, just to feel good about who he is and be a thriving human being.
Yeah. I'm just concerned. It seems like we're spending so much money trying to find the Soylent Green or whatever. Yeah. That we'll soon be just drinking this highly processed medicine shake, and we'll go sit in a pod for 30 seconds, and that will be our daily movement prescription, because it's going to stim our muscle cells or something. And we're moving into this dystopian future where medicine has just kind of really taken over. I don't, obviously, right, tell by my tone of voice, I don't think that's going to happen. And I clearly don't think it should, but it does seem like there's a lot of money chasing, you know, there's, to your point, this person who's very overweight and just needs to lose that weight medically and has tried all their life without success, right? That there has to be a glimmer of hope in medicine coming up with these technologies. But I'm with you. I think coming alongside of marrying technology, the best of technology, with the best of healthy lifestyle is clearly the way to go, right?
Yeah, but even then, like with this individual, the plan is not for them to be on this medication for the rest of their life. This was a bridge to health. It's not the solution.
Bridge to health, yeah.
Right now, he's weaning off of those. He's got his lifestyle under control. When you're that unhealthy, sometimes you need a little extra kick. When you have that much fat, so metabolically unhealthy, you're not motivated. It's a vicious cycle. So we use tools in medicine, but we need to see them as tools and bridges. They're not the solution. And he understands that. And he's made the changes. And now he's coming off the medication. And he's going to move because he's a human and he needs to, not to lose the weight. We've got him in a situation now where he can do that.
All right. And then, Matt, as we're just wrapping up here, you've talked a lot about, you know, you talked about this guy that you're very obese and you've got some pharmaceutical interventions to help kind of get him into a stable place and moving him forward. You talked about professional high-level athletes. Is there who is your target? Who are you guys going after, or is this really, is this medicine for the masses?
Yeah, what we do, it's only for human beings. So that, I think that'd be our target.
Right. It's human beings. There you go.
I mean, yeah.
Kids? Do you work with kids?
So we're not, only because of the sensitivity around genomics and DNA sequencing and kind of just giving consent around that. So there's some sensitivity. One of the things we don't want is parents who do this so they can create superhuman high school or middle school athletes and things like that. We're not really.
Yeah.
We just, right. I have four kids and I just see a lot of that. So right now it's 18 and over, but kind of 18 to 100 and however old you are is kind of the target. We do have my grandmother, 80-something-year-old with dementia, then max contract NBA players. It's anyone who wants to feel and perform better. That's basically it.
Fantastic. Anyone who wants to feel and perform better, and I'm guessing that's everybody out there listening to this, myself included. All right, Matt, let's go ahead and put a bow on this. How can people get in touch with you? How can they connect with Wild Health? How can they learn more, potentially work with you?
Yeah, just wildhealth.com. That's it. Everything's there. We have a podcast, the Wild Health Podcast, but go to wildhealth.com. There's all the information. And also, we have a fellowship. So providers, health coaches, and physicians who want to learn genomics and precision medicine, I think that's at wildhealthfellowship.com, but there's probably a link from the regular website as well. So everything at wildhealth.com is right there.
All right, folks, I will make sure I put that into the show notes here, as well as all their social media, the podcast, which is a great podcast, by the way. Shout out to that. You guys make sure you check that out. Matt, I want to thank you so much for being so generous with your time, coming on the show here today and helping us navigate this very complex, but a very exciting world of precision medicine. I just love the work you guys are doing and encourage you just to keep up the great work.
Thank you, Kevin. This was so much fun. I think your podcast is great. I've listened to your episodes and you're spot on. So really appreciate all the work that you're doing as well.
Okay, that's our show for today, folks. If you've enjoyed this podcast, I want to let you know that we have other free resources over at silveredgefree.com. There you'll find our free guides with our top tips on nutrition, exercise, and healthy lifestyle to assist you in your weight loss and fitness journey. So feel free to head over there and download anything that looks useful to you. I'll put links to everything we talked about in the show notes, and you can find those over at silveredgefitness.com/274. As we wrap up our time together today, you can show your support for this show in two important ways. The first is to tell a friend about this podcast and encourage them to give it a listen. The second is for you YouTube folks to please click the like and subscribe buttons, and for you podcast folks to please give this podcast a 5-star review on whatever platform you listen to podcasts on, and be sure to subscribe and follow so you don't miss any future episodes. I really appreciate you spending your time with me today, and until next time, stay strong.